The committee will come to order. We do have a quorum present. I'd like to welcome you all to the Public Safety Finance Committee. And just in terms of what we're planning for today, it's our first meeting, so what I thought we could do is have some initial introductions of members and then staff, and then we'll have a brief presentation by Mr. Carger, who's the fiscal staff to this committee, and then a presentation by the Department of Corrections. We'll be having several of these overviews in the next couple of weeks, but we're not actually going into any budget analysis at this point until the governor's budget has been released. So why don't we start this way by just doing some brief introductions. If you could just say what district you represent, not just the number, but also geographically, a lot of people don't know where the numbers are. And also how long you've served on this committee, if you've served on this committee. And maybe one more question is what you do outside of the legislature, so we get a sense of your professional background or what you do when you're not serving here. So I will start. My name is Michael Paymar, and I represent District 64B, which is the western portions of St. Paul. If people have been to St. Catharines or St. Thomas or McAllister around there, those colleges in St. Paul, that's my legislative district. This is my sixth term in the legislature. I've served on this committee for 8 of the 10 years that I've been here. I took a brief vacation from it for one biennium. Outside of the legislature, I have to say this: I am not an attorney. People have accused me of being an attorney. I'm not an attorney. I have great respect for the profession. I'm not an attorney. I don't know if it's because I look like an attorney or sound like an attorney or something, but I'm always being, people think I'm an attorney. I've told Phyllis Kahn 3 times since I've been here that I'm not an attorney, and she still calls me a hotshot attorney, but I'm not. It's got to be the hair. But what I do is I'm a resource specialist with the Battered Women's Justice Project in Minneapolis, which is a federally funded program that provides training and technical assistance to the courts, law enforcement, and human service providers on how better to intervene in family violence cases. And I've been involved in this field for the last 25 years, so maybe that's why I sound like an attorney. So why don't we next have our vice chair introduce himself, and we'll just go around the room.
Okay, I'm Dave Olin. I represent District 1A, which is northwest corner of the state, northwest Pennington, Roseau, Kitson, and part of Marshall. I have the dubious distinction of being a first-year legislator. I come with 32 years' experience as a prosecutor. I spent the last 32 years of my life as Pennington County Attorney, so I obviously come with prosecutor experience. I also come with a lot of county concerns about financial issues.
I'm State Representative Deborah Hillstrom. I represent District 46B, which is all of Brooklyn Center and parts of Brooklyn Park. I have been in the legislature for 6 years. I have served on public safety the entire time I've been in the legislature. And in my personal life, that kind of changes. I've done everything from bookkeeping and accounting to currently I'm a massage therapist.
Wow.
Ooh.
We may need some of that.
Right.
And
I get to sit next to you. I'm Augustine Willie Dominguez. Just call me Willie Dominguez. It's fine. I represent 58B, which is downtown Minneapolis and Northside. We're known as the entertainment city of the state, in fact. This is my first term, my first try at being on the public safety finance division here. My other life, I'm a consultant with nonprofit organizations. I have a radio show that comes on every Saturdays from 11 to 1. It's bilingually. I've been doing that for the past 26 years on KFAI Fresh Air Radio. So from time to time, I may ask you to come on air and do a little program. Maybe the chair would like to come on and talk about the committee or talk about issues that may confront our great state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm John Lesh. This is my third term in the legislature. It's my second term on the committee. Last term I went to taxes because you guys conflicted with taxes. So it's not that I don't love you all. I just had to go do taxes. I represent District 66A, the North End and the East Side, and Como Park areas of St. Paul. And outside of the legislature, I'm a prosecutor for the city of St. Paul. I prosecute primarily domestic assaults and DWIs.
I'm Carla Bingham. Sorry, I have a cold. I represent 57A, which is most of South St. Paul, half of Cottage Grove, Newport, St. Paul Park, and Great Cloud Island Township. This is my first term, therefore first time on the committee. And my full-time job is working as a paralegal on the property crimes team at the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, and I've done that for the past 3 years. I'm also a former chair of the Cottage Grove Public Safety, Health, and Welfare Commission.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Paul Coles. I represent District 34A, which is central and western Carver County and a portion of northern Scott County. I was just elected to my third term. This is my first term on the public safety division. I served on civil law my first term. Took a little hiatus. Mr. Chair, I am a recovering attorney. I'm not currently practicing. In my other life, I work for a life insurance company here in the Twin Cities. I'm no longer practicing law, but did for a number of years at the Ryder Bennett Law Firm before leaving there a couple years ago.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and other people, members. I'm Leon Lilly, Representative 55A from North St. Paul, Maplewood. I'm new to this committee. And I work for Northwest Airlines, so thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Mark Biskins. I represent District 35B, which is entirely in Scott County. It includes cities of Jordan, Savage, Elko, Newmarket. It's my fifth term in the legislature and my first foyer into the Public Safety Committee, and I look forward to it. I'm all for public safety, Mr. Chair. In my full-time job, I am a public school administrator. I've been a public school educator for 23 years. Currently work at the only public school remaining in downtown St. Paul, Mr. Chair, the St. Paul Conservatory for Performing Artists, and our school's in the Landmark Center. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Senator Solberg, you want to go next, and we'll take the staff after. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Lawrence Solberg, Representative District 3B. I'm an ex-official member, along with Representative Lynn Carlson on this committee. So we won't be in here very often, and when you need a vote, we won't be voting, Mr. Chair. We will be kind of monitoring the committees as we go through the Finance Committee. My district is District 3B, Itasca County, parts of Itasca County, Grand Rapids is a major city, and all of Aiken County. Senate District 3, by the way, runs from the middle of Mille Lacs Lake up to and including the northwest angle. It's 300 miles long. And I have the lower half of that. So mine's about 150 miles long, something like that. I've served before on the Judiciary Committee years ago. Was chair at one time of one of the divisions of the Judiciary Committee. It's a great committee. Throw all kinds of people in jail. I'm currently a retired school teacher. I taught school at Greenway and Florida for 30 years.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Steve Smith. I'm an attorney in private practice. I also respect the profession. I've served on judiciary or public safety in some form since I walked in this place in 1991. Representative Murphy was my chair lady at that point. Mr. Chairman, if you'd indulge me for just a minute or two, I have a few comments I have not been able to make yet to you, so I'd like to share them with you. I want to congratulate you on your assignment to this committee. I've had the honor to lead it for the last 4 years, and it's an experience I'm going to treasure my entire life. It's in my opinion that if Minnesota is going to succeed, the Public Safety Committee cannot bog down or become a partisan battleground. I think the first duty of any civilized society is to provide its citizens safety. It doesn't make any difference what amenities are in school if you can't get there safely, and so forth. So you and we are charged with everything that's involved, the courts, prisons, law enforcement agencies, the public defenders, the legal aid lawyers, human rights, civil rights. It's an awesome task and responsibility. I want you to know how much I appreciate, when I sat there, the guidance and the leadership that you offered, as well as Representative Murphy and Representative Hillstrom. Some nagging, but a lot of guidance and a lot of assistance. My memory is not the greatest, but it's not too faulty either. I can remember the days when we took a few roll call votes in this committee. Not necessarily because I wanted to, and they were few, but there were times when some needed to make a statement on deeply held principles, so that's fine. But to the extent that that we can reach consensus and cooperation, I will be supportive of you. I also can remember with, and this is the commercial message here, I can remember with a sense of pride that the last session that fully a third of the bills heard in this committee and I think incorporated into our packages had chief authors who were members of the minority. Your ideas were incorporated on many occasions in omnibus bills, and not all of them were in the category of Mary Murphy's re-election bills on the fire code. In closing, Mr. Durbin, if Minnesota is going to succeed and remain safe, you need to know that your adversaries will not be House Republicans. They're going to be the lawbreakers, the evildoers, and maybe even Senate conferees on public safety bills. So I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mary Murphy. I'm from District 6B, which is part of Carlton and St. Louis County. I have the cities of Scanlon, Thompson, Proctor, Hermantown, and five precincts in the city of Duluth, plus three townships. And before it was 6B, it was 8A, and before it was 8A, it was 14B, and it's changed perhaps more than I have. But I was first appointed to Health and Human Services and Corrections by Speaker Sieben in the early 1980s, and so since that time I've always had interest in the Department of Corrections, and then over the years other things were added to it. Representative Smith said I chaired in the 90s for 6 years. And it was a good experience. And I totally echo all the things that Chairman Smith said about its nonpartisan issues and the people's safety in this state help. I hope this year that we're able to look at some things that we haven't been encouraged to look at in the last few years because of financial situations, and primarily that is community corrections, probation, and our relationship with counties and the local correctional facilities in throughout the state. And speaking of that, I'm just so upset because this morning I saw in the dumpster a set of statutes that had been thrown out because we have new statutes now. And I know your local jails or correction facilities would love to have them in their library or in their day rooms because the people that are incarcerated are always looking for a way out. And
pile them up and get to the window? Or
and good idea that perhaps could happen, but I know that you would win points with your local correctional officers or the sheriff or whoever if you delivered your box of books to them, because I've had that experience. For 36 years in my other life, I was a teacher, a social studies teacher, and 33 of those years were at Duluth Central, but I'm no longer doing that in a formal manner, and so my job now is historical preservation, and I'm a groundskeeper in the off-season. So I look forward to working with you on this, but I wanted this chair because it's an easy out in case there's something that I already remember that's been told to us, or because somebody comes to talk because my schedule's pretty busy. But I'll be here to vote.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Cornish, we're just doing some introductions, talk a little bit about where the district geographically, and your time here, and what you do when you're not a legislator.
Well, I'm Tony Cornish from Good Thunder. First of all, I apologize for being late. I'm usually early, as members last year can tell. I served previously on this committee last year and had a ball, and I loved it and asked for it to come back, and it did. So I'm probably the only legislator on this committee that's been in jail. And but it was on the right side of the bars. I was a jailer for 3.5 years. So I was a policeman and a deputy sheriff, and I finished up 22 years as a game warden up in northern Minnesota, and retired. And now I'm retired and cut wood and do this, and look forward to this coming session. And my district entails... I live in Good Thunder, but it's Blue Earth County, Waseca County, and Faribault County, which borders Iowa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Larry Hawes. I represent St. Cloud and Haven Township, and I'm a second quarter freshman. I come in a special election. I am not a lawyer also, but I did watch the O.J. trial for about 17 hours straight. That should count for something, I think. You're not the only one that has been in the jail. I have also been in the jail. I was the wrestling coach at the Greystone Prison for 3 years, which was, at least it kept me in Irish stories for a long, long time. I previously have been a coach and a park and recreation director and a county commissioner, and I come from an area, my city has three counties in it, and we're represented with seven little police departments, and so we have a lot of confusion that we're trying to figure out how we can afford, make more efficient, and keep public safety. So that's the reason I selected this. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Rob Eastland. I'm from District 17A, which is just north of the metro. It includes most of Isani County, a few precincts in Chisago County, and then the city of St. Francis. I've served on this committee for 4 years previous to this term. I've been in the legislature for 6 years. Outside of here, I it's kind of interesting. Nobody so far has mentioned their spouse, but you know, one of my primary jobs is to be a good husband and be a good father, and I hold that task very highly. So it's difficult sometimes with the schedule that we run here to do that, and it's a challenge for all of us to do that. But in my professional life, I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota. I taught school and coached football for 6 years, and then I live on our family farm, which is a century farm, and I took over that and farmed and milked cows for about 20 years. And then in the past few years, I've been doing some crop farming, and I have a property management business where we manage some commercial industrial property, and a builder's license. We do some commercial building as well. So done a lot of different things, and I enjoy this committee. I think I agree with Representative Smith. This is the core of all of state government and everything that we do. If we can't start from a platform where we have a safe and a well orderly society, well-ordered society, that everything else we do will be for naught. So I appreciate being on this committee, and I look forward to working with the new chairman and solving a lot of problems.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Tina Liebling. I'm a second-termer. This is my first time on this committee. I'm really pleased to be here. I'm from District 30A, which is part of Rochester. The Mayo Clinic is in my district. And I just like to say that it's a very diverse district, despite what people tend to think about Rochester. It's really economically diverse. My district goes from physicians and engineers, a lot of whom live on one end, to trailer parks on the other end. So I have really a lot of diversity, both racially and economically and in every way you can imagine. I am an attorney. I am not recovered. Not trying to recover. And in fact, I'm not practicing currently just because I don't have the time, but I'm desperately trying to keep up my license and hope to get back to it. And I've been an attorney since 1985, and most of my practice has been criminal defense practice. So I might be the only criminal defense lawyer on this committee. I also, I've been in a lot of prisons, in a lot of jails. I used to, I've done a lot of public defender work. And before I moved back to Minnesota, I was in Chicago and worked for the Cook County Public Defender's Office and did criminal appeals. So I traveled all over Illinois visiting all the prisons and talking to prisoners. I also served for 6 years on the Community Corrections Advisory Board for Dodge, Fillmore, and Olmsted counties, so I got a good perspective there, and I'm very interested in this committee and appreciate being here.
Thank you. Welcome. Representative Mueller, we were just finishing introductions, so tell us a little bit about your district and how long you've been here and what you do outside of your legislative life.
Those are the things that can be mentioned. Thank you. about the sweater. I'm Joe Mullery. I'm from 58A, which is the north end of North Minneapolis, right north of Willie's district, the area of west of the river. And my district is like last night. It wasn't that I wasn't awake this morning that I was late. I was up at 4:30 and didn't get back to sleep. There were gunshots outside. So, and it's we're kind of the unfortunate. We've become the leader in murders in Minnesota and a lot of crime. Willie's. Well, on the council, they pushed it up into our district before. And so we have huge problems. I don't do very much. I'm an attorney, but I do almost, I've done very little even over my life of criminal law. I did some when I was with a St. Paul law firm. And but I, ever since coming here, since because of my district, I've been very involved with criminal issues. I've become the one that a lot of the POs in Hennepin call on issues. A lot of the police call me and things like that about issues.
Thank you. And I think this is your sixth term also, right?
Right.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Let's have the staff introduce themselves and just both the partisan and nonpartisan staff and just say what you do and how your relationship to this committee. Mr. Clear, you want to start? We'll just go around this way.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman and members, looking forward to working with you all this year. My name is Jim Cleary. I'm from Health Research, and I've worked on a part-time basis with this committee for quite some time. My full-time role since 9/11 has been in veterans and military affairs. As the lawyer winds down, hopefully I'll be able to return to this role on a higher basis. Mr. Chairman, I should point out, I've always thought of you as an attorney, too. I remember sitting with you the day you came, the conversation and everything. I don't know how I got that impression, but I mean that as a compliment.
The bar might have an argument.
My training has been in the social sciences, and just a couple of formative experiences. For a while, I worked as a psychiatric assistant at the University of Minnesota Hospital in the psych ward. That was an interesting experience. Another crazy experience was a couple of years in the Marine Corps, including a year in Vietnam, way back in the 60s. And then observing, or as a sociologist, all the social tumult as a result of the war. My wife and I have been married 37 years, and I'm looking forward to this a great deal. I handle DWI and firearms issues, and also criminal justice statistics.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Becky Perius. I'm an analyst and attorney with House Research, and this will be my third session with the Public Safety Committee.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jeff Diebel. I'm also an analyst with House Research and an attorney. I have been with this committee since I started here 7 years ago, so this will be my seventh session. My previous life, I was an attorney at a larger law firm in the Twin Cities practicing civil law. I also have a part-time job with the U.S. Army as an officer in the JAG Corps, so that may become a full-time job depending on circumstances, but it shouldn't take me away from the committee's work. But I look forward to working with each of you and helping you achieve your goals and the committee's goals.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Gary Carger. I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee, so I'll be working with you doing research on budget issues, putting together the budget, and also coordinating fiscal notes for the committee. I've been here since 1994.
Okay. Before we move on to the rest of staff, I just want to say about the nonpartisan staff. They are superb, absolutely superb, approachable, and so especially for new members and freshmen, if you have any questions, legal questions, process questions, their doors are open and they'll be extremely helpful. I just wanted to say that.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Melanie Lacombe. I am the committee administrator for this committee. I am new to legislature, so I can celebrate or commiserate with all the new members here on the committee. I am an attorney. I was at the Dakota County Attorney's Office prosecuting in the Juvenile and Protective Services Division and then moved into private practice working for the Ryder Bennett Law Firm, and I am now here and happy to be so.
Mr. Chair and members, I am Libby Wireman. I'm the committee legislative assistant. This is my second session, per se. I started in 05 as a legislative assistant and came back end of 06, and I'm here permanently to assist you in any which way and how I can. My background is actually in public safety policy development. I work for an organization called WATCH, which is a nonprofit court monitoring organization that looks at Hennepin County courts. Pleased to be here.
Asia?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Asia Bonsu. This is my third session here, but my second session with the Public Safety Committee. I have found that my time on public safety has been extremely interesting and exciting, and if I were going to be here longer, I would probably like to serve on public safety for my entire term. It has been that... I'm glad to see so many new faces on the committee, and I believe that everybody will have a very interesting and enlightening time here.
And I'd just like to say, Asia said I could announce it, that it's public. Unfortunately, she's leaving this committee and leaving the state of Minnesota and is taking a job with the State Department, and will be involved, will be in Iraq for part of your mission, and so when you go, we wish you well, as well as Representative Smith's son, who I understand is now in Iraq, and will be in Iraq.
Mr. Chairman, he's only in boot camp at the Air Force, however, that is probably his destination.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Dennis Verdon. I'll be the Republican research for this committee. For the past 8 years, I was in the Republican caucus as the committee administrator for civil law, and in that time we sent this committee probably thousands of bills, and it'll be interesting to see what happens to them now that I'm on this.
Is there anyone I want to have the pages introduce themselves to, or I don't know if you're permanently assigned to this committee or not, but would you just introduce yourselves? Stand up. Thank you.
Graduated from the U.S.
so far it's been an enjoyable experience.
Okay, welcome.
My name is Brian Madigan. This is my second go around as a page and the second time on this committee. The first time was in 99 years ago.
I'm Ron Ronello, and I've been around for about the last 8 years. It's a privilege to come back. I enjoy serving on a committee. I'm for the most part, retired. I am retired, actually. A lot of years from General Motors, and I do feel it's important to drive American, and I did a plug. I've never been in jail, but I've dealt with a couple people get out, so let's leave it at that.
Well, thank you, members and staff. Am I leaving anyone out? Am I leaving anyone out? Okay, let me just, you should have a copy of the proposed committee rules in your packet. These are basically the kinds of rules that you've seen before. If you want to have discussion on them now, we can. What I was hoping we could do is that you could read these at your leisure, and then next week we could formally, I guess not adopt them, but we will... make them available to the Speaker and all members of the House. But if you have any problems with what I'm proposing here, please come and see me or talk to Ms. Lacombe, and we can take those under consideration. But I think they're one of the basic committee rules. I won't be taking roll as we did last during the last biennium. I think that's fine to take roll, but I won't do it. So it's up to you to... let Ms. Lacombe know or Ms. Wyrum know if you are not going to be here or if you're late. So don't assume that she's going to mark you present. So make sure that she knows. Otherwise, you will be marked absent. You have some issues about committee decorum here. I don't think I need to go over that. I was torn about the 24-hour rule, but I've decided to keep the 24-hour rule as has been the practice in this committee for years, on amendments, unless they're minor amendments to fix a bill. And if you have a problem with this, let me know. I mean, if there is some amendment that needs to go beyond outside of the 24-hour rule, let Ms. Lacombe know or myself know, so we're not overly rigid about this, but that's my intent. And I just want to say that I hope that we can have a respectful debate and that everyone has an opportunity to be heard in this committee. And if there's any issues about the way I chair this committee, if you have issues around fairness or anything that you have concerns about, please come and see me. I really appreciate that. And I really am pleased to have Representative Smith and Representative Murphy back here. I've served under both them as chairs, and they have a wealth of information, and I think we're very fair chairs at different styles, but we're very fair to me, and I think the minority caucus over the years when Chair Smith chaired this committee. So I'm really glad that both of them decided to stay on, and I really mean that. We will obviously be having an omnibus public safety crime bill, and we will craft that bill, and I hope that it's inclusive in a way that you will feel proud about that bill. I think it'll be sort of a cross between the way Representative Murphy did it and the way Representative Smith did it, but I haven't quite figured it out. But I hope that everyone's voices will be heard on that omnibus bill. So I just have a few comments, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Carger, and then we'll have the DOC presentation. As Representative Smith and Murphy said in their introductions, this committee has usually functioned in a bipartisan or nonpartisan fashion, and I hope we can continue that. There are occasions when we may have some ideological differences, like I don't remember whether Representative Cornish brings his guns to committee or not. Sometimes we have a little difference of opinion there, but other than that, I think by and large we have that we work in a consensus manner because public safety is of prime importance. As you know, the needs in this state are great. Crime knows no boundaries. Representative Mullery talked about the crime in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We probably hear more about that, but no city or town, rural or suburban or urban, is immune from crime. And I believe that our quality of life is in part determined by both the real and perceived threats to our safety and to the safety of our families. Every department and agency that comes under the fiscal purview of this committee plays a critical role. And we have the daunting task of trying to meet the financial needs of the agencies that seek state funding with the limited target that we may be given. So, Representative Solberg, be coming to see you. while we have tried to meet the needs of a growing and changing state, budget cuts in recent years have made our jobs more difficult. The complexity of problems like what to do with sex offenders, how to deal with substance abuse offenders, the meth epidemic that we've seen recently, sentencing violent offenders, victims' rights, crime prevention, emergency preparedness, and ensuring that our criminal justice system is fair are just some of the challenges that we face. In my time here, we have ratcheted up sentences for many crimes. I have supported many of those bills, and some I have not. There are some offenders, I believe, that should be sentenced to prison for long periods of time because of the nature of their crime and because they pose a threat to society. And there are some people who must be quarantined for life. But as you know, 95% of the offenders that are incarcerated in our jails and in our prisons will be getting out. And I want us to seriously think about what kind of offenders we release from our prisons. I intend on holding hearings and hearing bills on new thinking and best practices for reentry programs so that we seriously reduce the recidivism rate in our state and that we give people who have made serious life errors a second chance and that the community that that offender chooses to reside in feels safer. In my view, we have not sufficiently addressed the causal factors of criminal behavior, and our effort at crime prevention has been diminished. I want us to reverse this trend, and I hope we can have an honest dialogue and that some of our initiatives reflect this kind of thinking. It costs $60,000 a year to house a juvenile delinquent in our Red Wing facility, and I think we can do a better job with at-risk families, intervene with individuals with mental health and substance abuse problems at an earlier stage and more effective way. If we do this, I believe we can reduce criminal behavior. Again, the financial expectations to this committee is great. Our courts, public defenders, law enforcement agencies, corrections, crime victim services, crime prevention programs, emergency agencies all need our help. We will hear their requests fairly. We will evaluate the governor's budget and ultimately and collectively cobble together an omnibus bill that I hope each of you will be proud of. Now, many of the bills will be heard in Chair Mullery's committee and some in Chair Lesch's committee, and I hope we can deal with the policy implications of those bills in your committees, but unfortunately, not all of the members of this committee serve on your committee, so we will need some policy updates as those bills come here. Finally, I know there's a tendency to want to increase sentences in this committee. In Representative Mullery's committee and in this committee, we will have those debates. A caution, though, and this is just my opinion, before agreeing to author bills that increase sentences, I hope members will think through how we will pay for those enhanced sentences, not only for today, but in the future. And I would ask you to ask this question: does the increased sentence actually deter crime? Is the increased sentence really needed by prosecutors? Is the increased sentence proportional for the crime? And are there alternatives that hold offenders accountable but don't break the bank? We will evaluate fiscal notes carefully, and I hope members ask tough and thoughtful questions. And finally, I would also like to say that I'm hoping that we can create some subcommittees of this committee to meet during the session and perhaps more in the interim, and I'm open to hearing your ideas. I will appoint chairs of these committees regardless of political party. So depending on our budget and time availability, I think we could hold, and I would like to hold, committee hearings in greater Minnesota to better inform our decision-making and get input outside of the metropolitan area. And I haven't talked to Representative Eastland about this, but this is an example. Representative Eastland, myself, and former Representative Soderstrom and Ellison were meeting quite frequently last year on trying to find some alternatives to drug sentencing. And I think that that's a worthy goal, and I would love to see a subcommittee that's just focused on the issue of substance abuse and incarcerating substance abusers and alternatives. So that might be an idea of a subcommittee that could meet and provide a report to this committee that could be adopted. So that's just an example. I think it's clear that we have great talent on this committee, and we have the opportunity to do good things for our state. I've started off with sort of an ambitious schedule. We have a lot of tours, a lot of tour schedule, but I do think, and I know Representative Smith and Murphy did this when they were chairs, and I thought it was very helpful. If you were going to be voting on, as you will be voting on budget considerations, you should get to know some of the institutions and the courts, and Asia has been set up a lot of these. So tomorrow we're going to be meeting at the Judicial Center at 8 o'clock tomorrow and have a brief tour of the facility, and the Chief Justice wants to address us, and then we will get a report by the court as we are today from the Department of Corrections. Again, these aren't budget presentations. We'll also have a tour of the BCA on the 18th. And Monday morning at 9:30, if people can make it, I'm hoping we can observe morning arraignments at Ramsey County. And where else are we going here? We're going to be touring Stillwater and Oak Park Heights. And I would like to get to as many facilities as possible. I realize that we can't do that on committee time because of it simply won't work to travel and get back here on time. So unfortunately, some of these meetings or tours will be scheduled on Friday, so I hope you can make those. And I've extended an invitation to Representative Mullery's committee and also to Senator Higgins. So we'll see how this all works out. If you have any other ideas about tours that would be helpful to inform this committee better, I would love to hear about it. So I think at this point, how much time do we have? Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
I would entertain any questions.
I just wanted to comment, and as you know, we've worked on this, and it's a new when your committee isn't all on the committee that I have, and so we'll try to involve anybody from your committee that wants to be, because it would help if we don't hear the whole thing on policy and then you have to hear the whole thing because one or two members don't come. So I don't know how we'll work on that. If everybody would notify me or my LA that wants to get all the information from our committee, and everybody obviously is invited to come to any hearing, we'll try to since your committee is mostly dealing with the criminal part, we'll try to line up the bills that are criminal on the same day and civil on a different day so that the members of your committee that aren't interested in the civil end of it wouldn't have to sit there for one bill from the criminal side or something like that. But it would be really good if they could work that way so that you don't end up doing the same thing over again.
Yes, I totally agree, and Ms. Lacombe will work with you and your staff to make sure that that happens as much as possible. Any other questions or comments before we have our presentations? Okay, I apologize too, I have a cold here, and I do have hand sanitizer that was made available by Ms. Wyrum. If anyone wants to use it, if anyone's coming down with a cold, seems to be going around the facility here. Mr. Carger, do you want to give like a 10-minute presentation on budget, and then we'll move on to DOC.
Mr. Chair, members,
I'm going to be referring to a handout in the that should be in your packets. It's a little bar graph and some numbers on it. But first, let me just say this, that this committee's budget is fairly substantial. It is now over about $1.7 billion. When I started with Representative Murphy in 1995, one of the first sessions there, the budget was $867 million. So you can see that it has grown over the years. I just want to go over mainly for the new members. Mainly for the new members, I'd like to go over some of the accounts that we have. If you need further information on these, you're going to be receiving budget books when the governor's budget comes out. I think that's going to be about the January 22nd, and that's when the budget debate will really start for all budget committees. So let me just go over some of the accounts. We have the courts, and they consist of the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, the district courts. We also have the tax court, which is it's still under that. The tax court is an executive branch agency, but we consider it as, you know, part of the courts. We have corrections, public safety, and on public safety, I should comment, we do not have all of public safety. Public safety is divided between this committee and Representative Leaders Committee and the Transportation. We have the items such as the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the Fire Marshal, Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement, Office of Justice Programs, the 9/11 component program, and Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The Transportation Department, they have the State Patrol Administration, Driver and Vehicle Services, and a few others. Next, we also have the Public Defense Board. And then we have some of the smaller agencies, Uniform Laws Commission, Board of Judicial Standards, the Post Board, which is the Peace Officers Board, Private Detective Board, Human Rights, and Sentencing Guidelines. And then on that piece of paper that's in your packet, it's just a breakdown of percentage-wise, so it'll give you an idea of maybe how much time you want to spend on some of these agencies. You can see Corrections is the largest agency. They take up of the general fund budget about 49%. The courts is next at 33%, public safety at 10%, and the Board of Public Defense is at 7%. Then the smaller agencies make up about 1% of the total. With that, stand for questions or
questions? Representative Cornish?
Just background for some of you who have been here a while. How did, Mr. Chairman, how did the Transportation Finance ever get the State Patrol? And could we wrestle away from them and their budget too? I mean, so what did the public safety? How did they ever get it? Is it just because the tie to the funding of the Transportation Finance?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, I think it is because they are trunk highway funded. So I think they thought that was a fit for the Transportation Department or the Transportation Finance Division.
I think they could be funded a lot better if they were here, but.
Cornish, you might be right. Any other questions, comments, Representative Morley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carter, I just wondered, does corrections include the CCA money then, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mallory, yes, it does. And will the corrections, when you receive the budget books, corrections will be broken out in three programs. They'll have institutions, then they'll have community corrections, and then their operations.
Any other questions for Mr. Carter?
Well, one other thing, Mr. Chair. On Finance's webpage, you can now pull up some base budget information and agency profiles. And if members want, we can probably get that for all the members.
That would be good. Any other questions of Mr. Carter at this point? Okay, well, we have about 35 minutes before we adjourn, so... Deputy Commissioner Benson, are you, Commissioner, are you both coming? Okay.
I thought we'd split it up so you didn't get too sick of either one of us.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Would you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Joan Fabian. I'm the Commissioner of Corrections. And this is Dennis Benson. He's the deputy commissioner. I just wanted to, as long as you did introductions for the newer members, I just wanted to tell you that I've been in corrections for 41 years, and I started out in Ramsey County as a probation officer and worked my way up to department director. I was there for 37 years, and then I came to the state as a commissioner. So I, you know, have a unique perspective on what is needed. I know you've brought up several times about the counties, and I do agree with you that that's something we very much need to address. So I guess I will just start out with the fact that there are a lot of things that we need to continue to change and to, you know, have programs for, but I need to tell those of you that are unaware that Minnesota has consistently been recognized as one of the best and most innovative correction systems in the country. And that is because of the unique relationship that we have with the counties as well as the state providing assistance or providing the service. We're ranked 21st in state population and 33 lowest in terms of the crime rate, although your last evening probably wouldn't say that. We are the 48th lowest in terms of how many people we put in prison, and that is specifically because the counties sanction most of the offenders in our system. Our 40th per capita spending in terms of how much we spend for state and local corrections at $137 per person compared to $192 nationally. And we do have one of the lowest recidivism rates in the country. About 33% of offenders are returned to prison in Minnesota, compared with nationally it's anywhere from 50 to 75 in some states. So, you know, we are on the right track, and that isn't to say that everything is perfect. This comparison to Wisconsin, we started doing this a few years ago because there was so much comparison that Wisconsin was able to manage its budget better than Minnesota, and we felt that the comparison would be important to show. Basically, we have about the same population, general population, but our prison inmates in Minnesota, we have around 9,000. They have 22,000 people in prison in Wisconsin. And the next statistic on here, just for adult supervision, probation, and supervised release, we have 121,000 adults and another 14,000 juveniles. But in Wisconsin, it's much lower because they have them in prison as opposed to in the communities. The total state budget they spend, and this is annually, so they spend almost $1 billion a year on their correction system in Wisconsin, where we spend about half of that. The state adult facilities, they have 36 state-run facilities, where we have 8 adult facilities. And again, the per capita spending rate, we're rated 40th lowest in the country, and Wisconsin comes in at 5th. Again, this goes back to how the state is structured as far as providing correction services. I mentioned the unique partnership. Basically, for the last 40 years, elected officials and other professionals and decision makers realized that prison should be saved for the most serious offenders, and that because people do return to their communities, that they be sanctioned at the local level. And when I worked in Ramsey County, I mean, and in other counties, that was always why we have so many nonprofits and a lot of agencies that help the local agencies and the state as far as providing correction services. I think that it definitely is a way to maximize resources while promoting consistent, effective programming. Minnesota correctional professionals have been very involved in over the last 5 to 7 years in promoting and implementing evidence-based practices, principles and practices. And we're looking at that as the Minnesota way of doing business. And I know over the next sessions we will be talking about those principles, and I know the chair had mentioned that as well. Just for those of you that are new to the committee, I think it's important. You're going to hear that Minnesota has three correctional delivery, probation delivery systems. And basically this chart outlines that. And the Minnesota Department of Corrections provides not only the prisons, that's our responsibility, but it's also our responsibility to provide supervision in 55 of the counties for felony supervision. And in 27 of the counties, we contract with that county to provide also the juvenile and misdemeanor supervision. The Community Corrections Act counties, which there's 32 counties comprised of 17 jurisdictions, and they provide all of it, the felony supervision, the juvenile and the misdemeanor supervision as well. In the CPO counties, many of you are from the CPO counties, they provide just the juvenile and the misdemeanor supervision, and DOC provides in the other counties, or the felony in those counties. Dennis will.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dennis Benson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner responsible for the Institutions Division. I'm going to talk for a few moments here about the Facilities Division. This first slide, again, for those of you that have been around, is a little bit repetitious, but we have 10 facilities throughout the state, 2 juvenile facilities that are marked in yellow, and then 8 adult correctional facilities, one of which is dedicated to females at Shakopee. Our population is around 9,000 offenders today, 192 juveniles, including one girl that's committed to the commissioner. We have 10 wardens, of course, in these facilities, and half of those are female. We have 3 medium custody facilities, Faribault, Moose Lake, and Lionel Lakes, a high custody facility at Oak Park Heights, and then a level 4 at both Rush City and Stillwater, and I understand that you are going to be coming to Stillwater and Oak Park Heights here later this month. Our reception facility is located at St. Cloud. This slide just kind of gives you a retrospective glance at what has occurred regarding our population growth. And I don't think it's any secret that we have experienced dramatic growth over the past decade. This chart breaks it down in terms of what's happened since 1999. But I guess the good news is really the last couple of fiscal years, those numbers between the years, the 375, the 302 between 204, 205, and 206 are the increases from July 1 to July 1. So the growth is slowing a little bit. That's the good news, but you can also look at the percentage increase from year to year. The red bar at the top indicates the female population growth. It's been an 83% increase in the last decade, and it pushes 100% in the last 11 and a half years. This next slide is projected growth. This again is based on current practices, current policies, current statutes. So anything that occurs at the legislature, the rules change, and of course the population can go up or down accordingly. So again, I think the good news here is the trend of increases continue, but it isn't that cheap or steep climb that we saw in the earlier years here from 2000 to 2003. But the growth, again, 300, 200, 230, 234, 4 years, you got a new prison. So the growth is still there, and the need to continue to bond and find additional prison beds continues to be pressing. The bar at the top, again, indicates the female population projections. And again, while that's slowing a bit, particularly between 2010, 2011, the further out we get with respect to population projections, I guess the looser it gets too in terms of accuracy. And I would suggest that every year we get new rules, we get new court activity, we get new court volume numbers, and then we adjust our population projections accordingly. But the population will continue to grow if everything continues to remain static.
Two of the offender groups that are driving the increase are, as you know, drug offenses and sex offenders. And if you look at the chart that we have here and start from the bottom in a 10-year period, the bottom line represents the sex offenders. And you can see there's been a 46% growth in the number of sex offenders in prison over the last 10 years. The drug offenders, there's been a 285% increase in drug offenders over the last 10 years. And if you look at the blue, we broke down the meth offenders in, as well. And you can see that in 2001, we had 230 offenders in prison for meth. And in 2006, that number was up to over 1,000. So I think that, you know, that certainly is an area that we need to concentrate on, like you said, Mr. Chair, the drug offenses.
Mr. Chair and members, we thought we would just put the new members in touch with what's going on with respect to existing bonding projects. We have, we're in the process of bonding for 1,060 new beds at Faribault. We have one phase left that will be coming back next year to complete that project, or at least the bed space pieces of that project. There are continuing to be pressing needs for beds for our aging population. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure, this year and certainly next year as we have to bond for additional beds for very old men, particularly, who are probably going to die in prison. The Faribault project is a very efficient project. We add only 40% additional staff while doubling the bed space in that facility. We're in the process of building a 150-bed segregation unit at Stillwater. This project is underway. We anticipate completion in 2008. Shakopee is a 92-bed expansion that has not yet got underway, but it was bonded last year, and hopefully we'll start to move dirt in this coming spring. Lionel Lakes Health Service renovation, we're in the process of trying to get that ready to bid. Construction has not started there, but that was, I think, around a $2.5 million project. Shakopee was a $5.3 million project, and Stillwater SEG was actually two phases, and that's why that's underway, and that was the total amount, I believe, was over $20 million. Challenge Incarceration, another program that I believe you're going to be touring, a program that we're very proud of and that the commissioner will talk about here in a moment. It's an early release program with a strong treatment component, been very, very successful. We have a research component that's available on our website and with some impressive results statistics available as well. We're doubling the size of that program from 90 beds to 180 beds. Red Wing, last year we got planning money for a new vocational training building down there, and as Chair mentioned, that's really where it all begins, and it's kind of our last shot at intervention before they get dumped into the adult system. That's some background on the department. We also wanted to spend some time kind of highlighting some of the high points of our agency. We're not going to get into any budget details, as we'll have, I'm sure, a budget presentation. But one thing that I think we're very fortunate to have in Minnesota is the kind of inpatient chemical dependency initiative that we have in our prison system. This has been a priority of legislative leadership for the better part of the last 20 years. We opened our first chemical dependency treatment programs back in 1976 at Stillwater. longer-term treatment. And given the numbers, 85% of our population is assessed needing CD treatment while incarcerated. Today, we have 795 adult treatment beds. However, by the end of 08, we'll be up around 1,000 inpatient chemical dependency treatment beds. Longer-term treatment is absolutely necessary with this population. 30 days just doesn't get it. Our experience says somewhere between 4 and 12 months to deal with some of the criminogenic issues that this offender population brings to the table as well. Last year, we treated about 1,200 offenders. And again, the good news is we do have almost 800 treatment beds. The bad news is we are only able to treat about 1,200 a year, and we release somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 a year. So there is a void there. We've added the picture of the teeth because that's kind of a fallout of the meth epidemic that is upon us. And so in addition to treatment needs, there's medical needs, there's psychological needs, there's mental health issues. There's lots of other baggage that these offenders bring to the facilities as well. Education is another priority for the department. We do a very good job, I think, of asking people to get in, or nudging them a bit in terms of getting involved in educational programming. If they got a job in industry, they're required to participate in GED training, or they don't get pay increases the way offenders would who already have their high school diploma. From 2003 to 2006, we awarded almost 2,500 GED or high school diplomas. We have a variety of different vocational opportunities, including upholstery, printing, welding, construction trades, computer literacy, machinist, and carpentry in our facilities. So we, I think, have come a long ways in terms of preparing people for the next step or their reentry into the community. Another thing that I'm sure we'll be spending some time on is mental health. With the state hospital system moving in a little bit different direction, the number of people who come to our facilities with mental health issues has increased dramatically during the 33 years that I've been in this business. With about 25% of males and 56% of adult females on some type of psychotropic medication. So that requires lots of day-to-day handling of medications and medication monitoring. That does not necessarily convert to a major mental health diagnoses. That's another set of numbers. I believe it's about 8% for males and around 30% for females. But we are also having to become mental health experts, given the numbers. And I believe in our juvenile facilities, the number of kids that are on psychotropic meds is over 50%. We have been also fortunate in that we do comprehensive release planning with those that have serious, persistent, and chronic mental health issues, in that we have some discharge planners, so we're able to put together packets, work very closely with agents, supervised release agents, and the wraparound services in the communities prior to releasing these offenders. And as the slide indicates, about 1,751 have been involved in this planning service in the last in fiscal year 06. MnCore Industries, another program that I refer to oftentimes as kind of the backbone of programming in our correctional facilities. We operate 66 different business partnerships. Any given day, we have roughly 1,300 offenders involved in MnCore. And on a yearly basis, so very, very high turnover, almost 300%. We serve roughly 3,000 offenders. This program used to get a $6 million subsidy from the general fund. That stopped, I believe, back in 2003. We were charged with becoming self-sufficient. We have done that. We don't make a lot of money, but we, at the end of the day, we pay all the bills. We teach offenders transferable skills in many cases and certainly good work habits. And that's so crucial for so many of these people who have never rolled out of bed in the morning and gone to work. Just getting them in touch with an alarm clock and getting up and going to work, interacting with others, it goes a long ways with this offender group. They're also able to pay toward child support, cost of raising their family, restitution, and a fund for crime victims. In addition to that, MnCorp pays for a placement, job placement position. That's a new initiative. We're just getting that launched, and we're very excited about that. That's another piece of our reentry initiative that we'll talk about in the weeks that lie ahead. Also, MnCorp is one of those many programs that results in the Minnesota system having a very low offender idleness rate in our correctional facilities. And putting people to work and putting them to bed tired at night takes a load off of the correctional officer staff. It makes for running orderly correctional facilities, and I think that is a part and parcel to why we aren't on the front page of our major newspapers the way so many states are with respect to problems inside of our correctional facilities. We have problems. We will continue to have problems. But I think the the interval between those problems is significant, and one that is something that certainly we shouldn't take for granted, but it's because of the many different programs that are available.
One of our most promising programs, especially for treating meth offenders, is the boot camp or the challenge incarceration program. And it was created by the legislature back in 1992 and has a statute saying what the phases are and also defines who can go in. And no violent offenses can be in the past, so it's a very, carefully screened group that goes in. But 80% of our offenders who go into CIP graduate from it, which is really something. They have had time before they go into the boot camp to dry out in prison, and I think that certainly helps. And this boot camp is very rigorous, but why it's different from other boot camps across the country is that it really focuses on intensive chemical dependency treatment. They have the military bearing and the exercises and the rigid schedules, but they also are very into not only the treatment, but education and cognitive skills and also community service. We had, as Dennis mentioned, the recent evaluation. We're getting national recognition for it because we had a control group of over 1,500 offenders compared to those who have gone through. And the study found that the participants in CIP decreased the recidivism rate by at least 32%. We also added up the number of people that would have come back in and the days saved from the early release and have saved over $18 million since 1992. And as Dennis mentioned, we're going to double the capacity because it absolutely is working. The other piece that is so important to it is that following the 6 months of boot camp, they're released to the community, but on intensive supervision. And this certainly requires aftercare, the agent coming out, 3 to 4 times a week, nights, weekends, and also getting them into some kind of programming if they seem to be starting to falter. So that is one of the main reasons that the program is working so well.
Commissioner, maybe we can just take one little break here and just, because I know we only have 10 minutes left. I know you have a few slides left, but I wanted to, we have a few members who have questions, so maybe we should just take those now and you can finish up the presentation at a later time. So Representative Mullery, did you have a question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can ask them afterwards if you're trying to get their presentation done.
Okay. finish up in a few minutes
here? We can finish up very quickly.
Yeah.
Again, very quickly.
Is that the next one? Oh, mine's intensive supervision. Intensive supervision, supervised release, is a program that the legislature put together. It's defined in statute. It's an agent supervising, a minimum of or a maximum of 15 clients. It's a phased program where the most serious offenders are seen on caseloads that low. We have many things that can be involved in that program besides also the GPS monitoring, electronic monitoring, the face-to-face contracts, drug testing, curfews, and, kind of role modeling as well. There's some positive parts of this, and it isn't just the supervision part of it. But they, again, are there nights and weekends, holidays. In 2005, we got 18 more new agents, so now there's a statewide total. Much of that money goes to the counties to do the intensive supervision, and we will be looking at increasing that number.
Another program that's been around since actually funded in 1997, but it's the community house building program. We've built now 243 houses in Greater Minnesota, and again, this is a great program with respect to teaching offenders transferable skills. They're almost universally hired as soon as they complete the program. And these houses are, again, in Greater Minnesota, the offenders are housed in county jails. One thing that I neglected to mention regarding the Thistledew facility is we also have 24 adult females up there who are participating in the Challenge Incarceration Program. There's sight and sound separation from the juveniles, but we've been doing that now for about a year and a half.
One of our major initiatives this year will be offender reentry, as the chair had talked about. Research shows that successful transition is a public safety priority around the country, and we're real fortunate in Minnesota that for many years we've had programming in the prisons. Many other states are starting to put programming in the prisons, which is unfortunate that they didn't know that before. We've got a number of pieces of this initiative going that are already in place, and we'll be coming back to you to talk about more about what's going on with this. So, just the last, I just wanted to mention that we have major restorative justice programming, and obviously that is to increase opportunities for the victim, the offender, and the community to repair the harm done by crime. And at every one of our facilities, we have coordinators who work with the offenders as well as the staff. And again, I know you're in a hurry here, but I think some of the things that are going on with it are just outstanding. And if you look, we've been on A&E television, and we're doing a number of things. So at another date, time, maybe we could tell you about it.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the second slide. The $121,000 on adult probation, parole, supervised release, does that include just felony or?
No, actually.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative. I do have a breakdown of that, and I can send it over to you, but there's a total of, we don't have a total, we have it by male and female, but I should have. 32. It's about 30. It's about 40,000 people of that are on felony supervision, about 26,000 gross misdemeanor, and about 42,000 are misdemeanors, and another 14,000 are juveniles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three questions, and if I can't get them all answered today, maybe you could get it to me later, but I'd like to know the current status of capacity of each of these sites. We were talking about our prison population being overcrowded previously, and so if I could get that information. And then on treatment, I was contacted by a constituent who is currently incarcerated. She's a female. The availability of treatment, both for chemical dependency and sex offenders, and how you give priority. She can't have contact with her children. She's a sex offender until she gets sex offender treatment, but it's not available to her at this time because other people have priority. So if I could just find out how you give priority to who, that would be great. And then how are you doing on MNCOR in the women's prison?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, I think we're doing well with respect to MNCOR. We're actually employing a fair number. I'll get you that number. But we're also making a little bit of money down there. We've got several different industries that are in operation there. So we've increased a bit the employment at the Shakopee facility.
And the other information, Representative Hillstrom, they can get later. And we'll be having some hearings on some of those specific issues, too, and we'll have the DOC here, I'm sure, many times during the session. So Representative Biskins, and then we may have one time for one more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Benson, back to the bonding projects, the $5.3 million for the Shakopee prison. Does that include money set aside for fence around that facility? And if not, is there a separate fund set aside to construct that?
Deputy Commissioner Benson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, no, it does not. We proposed a fence last year during the bonding session, but it was in the governor's bill, but it was not included in the final bonding bill. We continue to believe that there is a need now for a fence around Shakopee, and we'll certainly continue those discussions with the executive branch as we move toward the bonding session in 08. It's a different facility today. 1986, I believe we had roughly 130, 140 female offenders. We're now on our way to 600 female offenders. We have murders there. We have sex offenders there. We have people who have the potential to be dangerous. We think it's a public safety issue that needs to be addressed.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Deputy Commissioner, the fence would not be constructed without a specific bonding allocation, or is the department setting aside funds to construct the fence regardless of whether there's a specific allocation?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we don't have funds to build the fence, and it really is a bonding project, so it would have to fall under the purview of the bonding committee.
Thank you.
Representative Dominguez, do you have a real quick comment? We can conclude here.
Okay. I had two questions, if you don't. Is that fine, Mr. Chair?
That's fine. They can provide the information to you maybe later. I don't know if they have a chance. I'll be able to respond to them right now, but go ahead and ask them.
Two of the questions I have, Mr. Chair, is on the chemical dependency treatment. Are the folks that are incarcerated, do they pay for some of that treatment? And the other one is on your mental health. Do you, with all the different languages, I'm sure you have incarcerated folks that speak different languages, do you have bilingual staff, or are you working with other community organizations on that part?
You answer those questions quickly.
Mr. Chair,
Deputy Commissioner.
Representative, no offenders do not pay for their treatment in the chemical dependency programs. With respect to bilingual staff, yes, we do have bilingual staff. We also use translators on occasion. We have even hired folks on a part-time basis or contracted with particular entities to provide that service to our population.
Okay. Thank you for your presence. Any further questions? We're going to have a couple of hearings specifically on substance abuse and both in our and treatment inside of our institutions as well as outside. So we'll have an opportunity to explore that more. Did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I just had an announcement for members of the committee, if you permit me that.
Sure.
Members, you may know that today at noon in the Rotunda is the third annual General Crime Victims Day on the Hill, so I would encourage you all to attend that if you could. It does address service providers and those who provide community services around the area of general crime victims. So I'll be in the Rotunda today at noon, and I encourage you to join me there.
Thank you. Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, thank you. We'll be hearing more from you in the coming weeks and months. Let me just a couple reminders to the committee. Please mute your microphone if you're talking, because this gets picked up, and I think we were actually on TV today. I'm not sure why, but we were. If you have any files that you want to stay with the committee, reports that are handed out, please write save on them, and they'll remain in your committee file. And write save. And then tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the Judiciary Center. Do you know the correct entrance? Is that the south side? Does anyone know?
Yes.
You can. What? It's the south door. So go. And what room are we in? Does anyone know? In room 230 at 8 o'clock. So please be on time. I'm not a morning person. I'm sure some of you aren't, but these were the cards that were dealt us, so we will be starting at 8 o'clock. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned.